Welcome to the View My Seats podcast. I'm your host, John Lord. With me today to talk a little bit more about the World Cup, including a preview of Sunday's game between the United States and Portugal, is my good friend Herx. Herxy, since it worked so well the first time before the Ghana game, here's hoping we can inspire the United States to some more great things this Sunday, deep, deep in the Amazon rainforest. How are you feeling heading into that game?
I'm feeling good. It's hard not to after seeing such a great gutsy result like they pulled out against Ghana. You gotta have the spirits buoyed by having such a great and important win to kick off the tournament.
There are lots of places to go with the Ghana game, but I'm wondering if it played out kind of as you would have expected it to play out. If the United States were to win, is that how you expected the United States to win, or was it different from what you expected if the United States were going to be successful in their opener?
I think the what was expected for the U.S. to win was the U.S. needed to score first. If they had to chase that game, given Ghana's talent, given their speed and their ability to do a quick turnaround whenever they got the ball, that part would have been really difficult for the U.S. to have to come back if they went down early. That being said, Dempsey scoring in under 30 seconds, that was definitely not expected whatsoever. So them going up early was absolutely necessary if the U.S. was going to grind out a result. And the unfortunate part was that it looked more like old U.S. soccer, where it's defend at all costs, don't practice what you've been preaching, being Klinsmann for the last couple months of we're going to play a more attacking style soccer, more possession oriented. It looked much more like traditional U.S. soccer of trying to hit them on the counter while defending like your life depends upon it.
It seemed to me that after Dempsey scored that early goal, that the United States was kind of on their heels for the majority of the game. And I wasn't at all surprised when Ghana scored the equalizer there late in the second half, because it just looked like that was the way the game was trending, where it looked like Ghana was taking advantage of their speed, the United States was forced to play more and more defense, and as you said, counterattack when perhaps opportunities were available. And I think most of us were, I was, and the people I was watching the game with, were fairly surprised and exhilarated when Johnny Football scored the header on the corner kick. Now, you know more about the roster than I do, but from what I understand, John Brooks, the defender who scored that game-winning goal against Ghana, he wasn't considered to be a part of this team until later on in the process. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. He was brought in not even during the qualifiers as much as he was during random friendlies, and a lot of that, I shouldn't say a lot, some of that has to do with just where he plays and the travel differences between, Europe to the United States for single games versus double games and all that kind of logistical scheduling difficulties. But he hasn't proven himself really at all as a professional. And the fact that he was brought in to join the team over other players such as Michael Parkhurst that everybody thought was, almost a lock given the U.S.'s defensive struggles over the past couple months, or even Clarence Goodson, who is a more experienced veteran, less talented than John Brooks could potentially be, as a lot of writers always use the high ceiling term. John Brooks has a massively high ceiling. He's got all the physical attributes that you want from a high-level professional soccer defender, but he has zero experience. And that was, that's what made his inclusion such a big surprise.
He'll, one of the other things that it would be important to talk about, when we preview this game between the United States and Portugal, Sunday's game between the United States and Portugal, is the impact injuries will have in that game, because injuries were a fairly substantial part of the United States game versus Ghana. And the whole reason that John Brooks was in the game in the first place was because he was replacing a starter who left due to an injury. And I can remember the commentators, I don't know who it was, talking about how they would have preferred that someone else go in besides Brooks. Is the name Omar Gonzalez, is that right?
Yeah, you got it, yeah.
So there was some questioning as to whether or not an Omar Gonzalez should have replaced the injured defender. What was the defender, Matt Bess? Was it Bessler?
Beisler, yeah.
Beisler, sorry.
Yeah, Gonzalez, until really until the send-off series, that stretch of three games that happened, you know, earlier this month, late in May, Gonzalez was considered to be one of the two starting central defenders along with Beisler. But his play this year, both for his club team, LA Galaxy, and during all the friendlies that the U.S. has been playing, has just been awful. Absolutely awful. He was pulled from the starting lineup, in favor of putting Jeff Cameron in the central defense, which was not where anybody viewed him as playing. He was commonly viewed as being a right-sided wing defender, or playing in the central part of the midfield, which was why he was getting, you know, zero playing time, this being Jeff Cameron, because the one strength that the U.S. has is in their central midfield. But Gonzalez was just doing so poorly that he had to be pulled and Cameron had to be moved around and slotted in his place.
Yeah, and I thought that the United States was forced to play a very defensive-styled game on Monday night, just because that was the nature of how Ghana was playing. That was a response to the way Ghana was playing, and Ghana was after Dempsey scored, Ghana was very much on the offensive. Because I think both teams realized that in order to advance from this group, they needed to win that first game. And so Ghana was clearly thinking that they didn't just need to get the equalizer, but they needed to score two goals at least to get the 3 points to have any real chance of advancing. So now, after Monday, the United States gets 3 points, and they're in fairly, let's say, decent position heading into Sunday's game. But there are a whole slew of questions, particularly how much does not having Jozy Altidore in the game versus Portugal really affect the United States' chances in that game?
Yeah, it's definitely the biggest question out there for the U.S. team right now. And my answer is it's huge. The Klinsmann, when he released his roster, he made a decision to bring four players that he considered strikers, and being Jozy Altidore as, you know, his preferred starter, Aaron Johansson as really the first backup to Altidore. He considers Clint Dempsey a forward, and, you know, he can move between the midfield and, you know, an attacking midfield position and an advanced midfield position and that second striker. And then Chris Wondolowski, but that was it. And those four players, none of those other three players can do what Altidore does. Altidore has progressed into very much a hold up forward, where ball comes up to him, if he needs to wait and hold off a defender on his back, he can do it. Johansson just isn't isn't of the same mentality. He's more of a possession, I want to beat a defender one-on-one type of forward. Wondolowski he's a cherry picker. He's a poacher, who can do all of the little things that you want a forward to do, but he can't hold up play and wait for the rest of his teammates to catch up to him. So it's going to be really interesting to see what direction, Klinsmann decides to go, especially, and the big thing that he needs to keep in mind when setting his lineup and setting his strategy is you have to deal with Cristiano Ronaldo coming down one side of the field.
Yeah, and Altidore is he's not coming back anytime soon. That looked like a classic hamstring pull in the game versus Ghana. It's too bad that there's not more roster flexibility, because there's a player who is currently being held hostage by ESPN Los Angeles, who I'm sure would love to make the trip down to Manaus for Sunday's game versus Portugal. This is kind of getting off topic, but, and I'll give the guy a break, because he's accomplished a tremendous amount in his soccer career, and being in front of a camera is not easy, but Landon Donovan did not look at all comfortable in front of the camera on Monday. And I wonder if ESPN will continue to use him Sunday.
Here's my problem with Donovan on camera. And you can see it with a lot of professional athletes who are trying to make that transition. When they get put on camera solo, they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
But if you pair them up with someone else, be it another player, a much older commentator, just really anyone else, you see the shoulders drop and they just get so much more relaxed.
It's so hard, and I understand why networks, ESPN, want to get former players and people who have been there in the World Cup before, but oftentimes their analysis is really disguised by their just lack of television charisma, which is so much of a learned skill. I mean, these guys are, Landon Donovan is a charismatic guy. I mean, he's a funny guy. He's self-deprecating. There's a hilarious EA Sports web clip. I don't know if it's on TV, where he's playing FIFA World Cup 2014 at home in his bathrobe, kind of mocking the fact that he's not with the team. But then you put him on camera solo, as you said, and it wasn't good. It was an uncomfortable situation for all of us. But he's no worse than some of the guys that ESPN's got in studio down in Rio. Ruud van Nistelrooy, one of the greatest strikers of all time, he can't stop looking at the television monitor. So when they do a wide shot of the studio, and you've got Tirico and Lee and the other Lawless and all the others, and Ruud van Nistelrooy is at the very end, and it's so unnerving. He just keeps staring at the floor at the monitor, and I want him to look up at the camera. But I digress. Getting back to the United States-Portugal game, so United States won't have Jozy Altidore, but Portugal's also dealing with some injuries as well, and it's not just injuries that they're contending with. They're contending with a few other things. They're contending with, I believe is it Pepe?
Yep.
Pepe is one of their central defenders, one of their better defenders, and he was sent off during Portugal's first game against Germany, so he is not available for Portugal. And there's also another defender whose name escapes me for Portugal who is hurt, or he might be a defensive-minded midfielder. But Portugal is wounded heading into this game on Sunday. So both teams, Portugal and the United States, are going to have to contend with injuries. And I'll add this into the analysis of the game for Portugal, United States. And that is that I know it changes on a game by game basis, but Portugal's effort against Germany looked completely detached and listless. And I don't know enough about their national team, but do they have a history of underperforming in World Cups or international competitions? They look totally disinterested. Maybe it's just playing Germany, and Germany is can do that to you because they're so tactical, so demoralizing and efficient. But is this Portugal's deal?
It really is. The Portugal's history has been very much an individual player versus over the team. You see someone like Cristiano Ronaldo, it is kind of epitomizes Portugal's World Cup history, or you know, world soccer stage history, where the individual players for Portugal have been some of the greatest in the world. Cristiano Ronaldo is the most immediate example, but looking through their current roster right now, you have Contrao, who got injured. He was the midfielder that you referenced. He's a world-class player, no question. Raul Meireles, again, world-class player, can't pull it together. Nani, who plays for Man United, world-class player, can't pull it together once he comes into Portugal. And through their history, it's been the same. They get on the big stage and the players, they don't mesh. And it turns into, a lot of criticism about, they don't care about, the country. They only care about, themselves and looking good so that they can get their next big paycheck. And it turns into a bunch of poor performances come World Cup time. In, 8 years ago, two World Cups ago, when the U.S. went out, beat them 2-0. The U.S. had no right in to win that match. But Portugal just doesn't pull it together.
And, Ronaldo is a player of immeasurable talents and so, so gifted on the ball and with his just creativity. But, and the announcers were alluding to this towards the end of their game versus Germany. I mean, he is very much a me first scorer and doesn't always look to get others involved. And there was a whiff of that, as I said, towards the end of the Germany game. So you have this looming sense of all these individuals on this Portugal team playing on their own instead of as a team. And when the best player behaves that way, it then kind of spreads throughout the rest of the players on the field. But do most people around the soccer sphere consider the United States, let's just say physically, to be overmatched on Sunday? I mean, physically, Portugal's still the better team, correct?
Absolutely. And skill-wise, there's no question that Portugal is the better team. But some of that does come from just looking at, you know, who the best player on each team is. And Cristiano Ronaldo is better than the entire U.S. roster. He's the best player in the world right now. And whenever you have that kind of player with his kind of talent, it's immediately going to tip the scales in one team's direction, in one team's favor. The biggest thing that the U.S. has going for it is their recent results, is their recent string, where U.S., while they didn't look great against Ghana, they got the win. And to gut out the win in that kind of fashion and that emotional lift that comes from that versus Portugal being demolished 4-0, granted against a better team, but it was a complete dismantling that Germany took to Portugal. Emotion plays such a big part in sports that the U.S. is coming in with the emotional advantage, the emotional lift, the psychological advantage right now is entirely in the U.S.'s corner.
But any good coach will remind his players, and this is what I'm sure is being said to Portugal, and that is that you're in control of your own destiny. You win Sunday, you beat Ghana Thursday, and unless, I'm pretty sure Portugal advances unless the United States can somehow beat Germany next Thursday, which, to be fair, as excited as we are about the United States right now, isn't very likely. So with this game in Portugal, how much, or against Portugal, we talked earlier this week about the role that weather and climate is playing in these games. And Manaus is the, as we've said, the field that is in the middle of the Amazon. And it's going to be really, really muggy on Sunday when the United States and Portugal play. I'm wondering if one team is better suited for those conditions just by the style they play or their training. What concerns me for the United States is that there did seem to be a lot of muscle pulls, not just Altidore and Beisler, but it just seemed like there was a lot of general fatigue and tightness on the American side against Ghana. Is that a byproduct of their training regimen? And are the Portuguese players who, let's just say, the majority play in, I don't think it's fair to say that a majority play in conditions that are more similar to the rainforest. But is there a certain style of play that fits the weather more? Is one team more perhaps prepared for to manage the climate of Manaus?
As much as it doesn't seem to make sense, a team that attacks more, a more attacking-oriented team, especially in this World Cup, seems to have been dealing better with the conditions than a defensive-minded team. And it doesn't seem to make sense, but when you look at the amount of work that a team has to put in, and you saw it with the United States against Ghana, when you're defending for 60 minutes, and you have to do all the reaction. You have to be the one reacting and working off what your opponents are doing. It does kind of start to click a little bit more that you're putting in more effort in that regard, because you're, when you're attacking and driving forward, you want to go right. Okay, you know you're going right, but your opponent defending you doesn't know which way you're going. So it's a lot more, you know, quick cut, just like basketball. It would seem that Portugal will have the advantage, because if the United States had to defend so much against Ghana, for so much of the game against Ghana, a team that has more skill, that plays at a higher level like Portugal, they would seem to be the ones that will take the weather advantage going forward. But that being said, late in Portugal's game against Germany, they looked just as exhausted as the U.S. did towards the end of their game. You know, they were playing with heavy legs. There was less effort being put into the game, but some of that might have also just been the fact that they were already down 3-0 after 60 minutes.
Yeah, the United States did look exhausted in their game versus Ghana, and I think a lot of that was because for the majority of that game, they were just really holding on for their dear life, as Ghana just really went on the offensive after Dempsey's early goal. And speaking of early goals, I think it would be in the United States' best interest if they were able to get off to a quick start again on Sunday, because Portugal has, in their game versus Germany at least, shown a tendency to fold when behind. And if the United States could somehow score a goal early like they did with Dempsey against Ghana, that could be enough to really maintain the momentum for that game versus Portugal. You talked last time about how there are a few key players who, if they play well, the United States will play well. And you mentioned Michael Bradley in the last time we talked. And to be honest, I didn't think Bradley was all that spectacular against Ghana, but that's kind of how he plays. You know, he's not a spectacular player, but he's just so incredibly solid at all times. I'm guessing the key on Sunday against Portugal for the United States is a defender.
You're absolutely right. With Portugal, given that Cristiano Ronaldo, assuming he plays in his normal position on the left wing, the matchup defender for that would be Fabian Johnson. Fabian Johnson for the past 2 months has been the U.S.'s best player. he's been so crucial defensively, but even more so, he's been the one that has really helped to unlock the U.S.'s attack by being the one defender that can be counted on at any moment to push forward and to get involved in the offensive side of the game as well. So because of that, what will be probably even more crucial than Johnson's defending is who ends up getting partnered with him in the midfield on that same side. Because Ronaldo is just so talented and such a good player, one person can't stop him. Johnson is going to need backup from whoever the central defender is on his side, which should end up being Jeff Cameron. And he'll also need help from the midfielders that end up playing on the right side of the field, most likely Kyle Beckerman and probably Alejandro Bedoya.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I'm confident after Monday because Monday's got us all feeling kind of good, but I'm also nervous about just how it's going to look when they start playing, because if my fears are true and are accurate, Portugal's going to look a lot quicker than the United States on Sunday. And if that's the case, then I worry about the United States' chances. But either way, Monday proved to me, at least, and I think a lot of fans in this country, that there is really nothing better than the World Cup. And the United States might be a little late to this party, at least mainstream fans will say. But being at a bar, watching the United States soccer team play a game like they did on Monday against Ghana, and just seeing how everyone reacts to the Dempsey goal, and it's really, really fun. And it comes around every 4 years, and I'm really excited to be out somewhere on Sunday and watch this game in the United States and Portugal. But I'm sure for you it's a bit more nerve-wracking than fun because of how closely you follow the sport, but it really doesn't get any better.
It's really this is the event that I live for getting out of my house for, no question. You know, we have the Super Bowl every year, and we always make a big deal of the Super Bowl here in this country. But it's not something that you need to go out for. You don't feel the urge to go out for it. But and with the Olympics rolling around every 4 years, it's not the same. This is the one event every 4 years that if you're stuck in your house, you better be surrounded by like 50 people.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, you just feel that you're going to miss out on that, that pro-American reaction that comes when something like John Brooks' goal happens.
Yeah. The intense amount of nationalism that occurs during these World Cup games is really unmatched by any other sporting event in this country. I've also never high-fived as many random people as I do during soccer games, big soccer games. And the same was true 4 years ago when the United States was playing in South Africa. Okay, so we've covered the Ghana game, and we previewed the Portugal game. And as we finish up here, Herx, I want you to just tell me your biggest World Cup surprise so far. Is it Spain being knocked out of the tournament, perhaps England getting knocked out of the tournament? The fact that, at least to my eyes, Brazil looks mortal. Any team surprise you with their good play at this point?
Costa Rica has definitely been a nice surprise, given what they were able to pull off in their first game. And Colombia. Colombia came in as one of those, oh, we're a dark horse type team. But the way that they've gone about, their two matchups now, you know, beating, Ivory Coast or Cote d'Ivoire yesterday, they play an attractive style game, and they've earned their results. They've absolutely earned the way that they've gone about themselves this tournament. On the flip side, it's definitely got to be Spain. you know, a lot of people coming into the tournament said, oh, is this really it? You know, you can't keep winning. The team hasn't changed, since they first won their first major international title. The team's getting old. They haven't refreshed. They haven't changed their style. And just like any other sport, as you see a team play more and more, other good coaches are going to be able to adjust their tactics, adjust the way that they prepare their teams to counteract what Spain does. And Spain just hasn't changed at all. So from that regard, it's not a huge surprise, but to go out and, 7-1 against them, like that is just not what was going to happen.
They looked tired. They looked very tired. They looked like they knew that they were tired. They looked like they knew that their incredible run was coming to an end. I didn't see much to that really. I know it's surprising the results, but they looked like a defeated team, a team that needed a few months of rest. And you mentioned Colombia, but my favorite part about Colombia is the synchronized post-goal dancing.
Yes.
When's that going to catch on in the United States? I mean, we've got to get together with some sort of dance routines because the Colombians know how to celebrate a World Cup goal. Okay, so we're all excited for Sunday. Best of luck to the United States team as they take on Portugal, and thanks for coming on and talking about the World Cup.
My pleasure. Go USA.
Talk to you soon. Yeah, talk to you soon, buddy.
All right.